one's time on you.
That was some music called My Throat, the Adiski, performed by the Alash Ensemble from the Republic of Tuva in Central Asia, a place that I personally had don't think I'd ever heard of before, although I had heard of Tuvan throat singing, which is what you heard in that recording. The Alash Ensemble will be performing in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois twice coming up, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Spurlock Museum, and then Monday at 3:30 in the afternoon at the Music Building Auditorium, a performance demonstration in that case. And with me on the phone, on their way to Appleton, Wisconsin, is the American manager and interpreter for the group, Sean Quirk. And in the background, I guess you hear the folks at Subway.
Yeah, we're on the way up to Appleton, Wisconsin for a show at Lawrence University, and just got to, with our busy schedule, sometimes we got to combine two things at once. And today it's eating and a radio interview.
And worse things that have happened than that on this show, I guess. So how long have you been involved with the Alash Ensemble yourself?
I've been working with them, for 8 years, I guess, and we've known each other for about 11 years.
So tell me how that relationship got started.
When I first went over to Tuva in fall of 2003 for a year on a Fulbright scholarship to study the music, they were all young musicians in the National Orchestra that had just formed, and being about the same age and having mutual interests of music, they became my teachers of Tuvan music and language, and along with a lot of other folks. But eventually, after a couple of years, got invited to come to the States on a program sponsored by the Library of Congress called the Open World Program, and that was our first tour. And ever since then, they hired me to be the interpreter, and ever since then, it's just kind of taken off from there. And I manage the band and buy the sub sandwiches and do the talking, and the guys provide the amazing music that you just heard.
What made you decide to go to Tuva? In the first place? What was your interest?
The music. It was there's a band called Hunhurtu, who's sort of one of the groups that brought Tuvan music to the world in the late 90s after the Soviet Union fell. And I heard that in college and just decided I was a musician myself in college, music major, and I decided I needed to go and learn that. So after a couple years of teaching myself to do it on my bike as a bike messenger in Chicago, I was lucky enough to receive a Fulbright scholarship to go there, and thought I was going to stay there for a year, and I've been there for 11 years now.
What were you doing in music school, and where?
I went to school in McAllister College in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I was a saxophone player. And I was just, couldn't find a job for that directly after school, so I ended up delivering packages on my bike to make my daily bread. And but I just, the music of tuba really just, even though it was so absolutely outside of my realm of knowledge, it touched my soul in a place deeper than really I think I've ever been affected by music, and it still does that to this day.
So you said you taught yourself while you were riding the bike. How does one do that?
Well, just like a tubin would, you just listen to it a lot until you really have the sound in your head, and you begin to attempt to imitate it. And at the time when I was first starting to learn, there was a very small community of people on the newly formed internet that were into this, and so by communicating with several other people, some of whom who had made further progress than myself, so working within that community and just, really just going in the shower every day and trying to do it, alienating roommates and girlfriends along the way. But eventually, after a couple of years, I became okay at it and realized that if one is going to sing like this and emulate this music, one should speak the language and understand the place and the people. Otherwise, it becomes just a rude imitation. So that's what inspired me to go over there originally.
So I'm guessing then that you've learned something of the history of probably both the country and this type of singing and music in general in the Republic of Tuva?
Absolutely, yeah. The common consensus, at least about throat singing, is that this is really ancient. Exactly how ancient is up for grabs, but people like Ted Levin, who's been a mentor to me, he's an ethnomusicologist at Dartmouth. He was the first American to study Tuvan music in the 1980s. He went over there in 87. I shouldn't say he was the first American to study music, but he was the first ethnomusicologist to go over there when it was still the Soviet Union. He says that throat singing goes back in time to before people invented language, so it's incredibly ancient, and the instruments as well, they look primitive and they're made out of all natural materials, but they're able to achieve an amazing variety of sounds. And the thing that people really need to understand about Tuvan music is that even though it's ancient, deeply connected with nature, it's not primitive. It has an entire system of sound and way of producing and perceiving sound that is totally its own and really fascinating to people who are both not really musical people and really deep musical people. Bela Fleck, who we've played with a lot, often talks about how these guys are some of the best musicians he's ever played with, and that's pretty high praise.
Well, he's played with a lot of people.
Yes, he sure has.
And this plug, for that matter, I'll be talking with him next week. He's going to be playing, actually, a concerto with the Peoria Symphony a week.
Great, the banjo concerto he wrote?
Yeah, a week from tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Oh, great. Well, tell him we say hi.
I'll try to remember. Yeah. So it's called throat singing, but is that at all a misnomer?
Yes, and actually that's something we often talk about when we're presenting it to people, because really everybody sings with their throat, right? It's like talking about foot walking, or brain thinking perhaps. And, really it's just because there's not a better way to talk about it in English. Some people talk about overtone singing or overtone singing, or overtoning they talk about, or harmonic singing. But these are all terms that can also apply to a whole lot of genres of vocal music that do emphasize the use of overtones. And so we just have kind of fallen into using Tuvan throat singing when we're specifically talking about what a lash does, because this is really some of the most subtle and complex and varied ways. You have a whole amazing variety of genres and styles within what we refer to as throat singing in English. So it's definitely a misnomer, but it's the best misnomer that we have.
The tune we heard called My Throat, I understand that part. The Ediski, what is that?
Yeah, that's why you got to, you know, get the liner notes to the album, because sometimes there's things that are just hard to translate for the back cover of the album. And Ediski is a some people actually here might know it's a piece of bark or grass that you take and you put it in your mouth, fold it up and put it in your mouth to imitate a bird call. You know, sort of along the same idea of putting wax paper on the kazoo, you know, when you're in third grade music class and doing something like that. So it's a bird call, and what it's referring to is there's all these subtle plays there in the language that I won't get into, but it's sort of comparing the singers. The whole song is comparing the sounds of the singers' voices to the various sounds of birds. So these days we've actually been calling it My Throat the Cuckoo in concerts. So the cuckoo bird is one of the words one of the birds that's in there, and I like that because it sort of recalls American folk music.
You made reference to Tuvan instruments as being, I guess, natural made but not primitive. What was the instrument? I think I only heard one, possibly two, in that recording.
Yeah, there's just one. There's just one in that recording. That's a Dosh Palur. When we listen to some of the other songs, we'll hear some of the other instruments. But the Dosh Palur, people call it the Tuvan banjo. It's got skin on both sides of a wood frame. It's a three-stringed plucked instrument. You know, similar in shape to a banjo, I guess, but more with a trapezoidal body. But we have the egil, which is a horsehead fiddle. It's a bowed stringed instrument. One thing, while I'm thinking of this, to point out to people is that Tuvans are not Mongolians, and although they share similarities, it would be like saying someone from Illinois is a Wisconsinite. You know, from afar they seem the same. You would be very insulted if you were from Chicago and someone said, oh, you're from what, Milwaukee, you know, and vice versa, because there is a well-known Mongolian horse head fiddle called the Moran Hur, which is really an updated version of the traditional egil, which the Tuvans still play, and does exist in Mongolia, but people think that, oh, the horse head fiddle is the Moran Hur, and that's not the case. It's the egil. And then there's the bazanchi, which is a four-stringed instrument. It's sort of like an erhu. We have a chadagan, which is a zither, and an array of percussion instruments, including a great big drum that's made from two castrated goats and a tree trunk.
That last one sounds intriguing. Let's listen to another song here. This comes from an album called Bura. Is this the most recent?
It is. We are in the middle of producing our third album. We've just recorded it, and as a matter of fact, we're starting a Kickstarter campaign for producing that. So that should be out pretty soon. It's going to be called Achai Father, and there's a lot of new stuff that people are going to hear in the concerts. But at the moment, yes, Bura is our second and most recent album.
The tune I want to play here is called something like Koshoy and Torgalig.
Pretty close. Good enough for America.
Why don't you say it yourself?
Pojoy and Torgalug.
Okay, I was far off, but I'll leave what you've got. And this, I don't have in front of me the names of all the types of techniques here, but this one definitely starts with a sort of warbling type of singing, which sure has a name.
Yes, it's called Borbagnadir. The song is about rivers, and this warbling type of singing is said to come from the sound of water streams flowing over rocks down from mountains and stuff. So the band specifically chose this arrangement to start with that type because the song's about rivers.
Alash Ensemble performing here on Live and Local from their most recent CD, a new one coming, as you just heard. They'll be in Urbana for a couple of performances, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Spurlock Museum, and then a performance demonstration Monday afternoon at 3:30 at the Music Building Auditorium, both of those on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. My guest is Sean Quirk, who is a manager and interpreter for the Alash Ensemble here on Live and Local. Thank you. I am going to let my guest repronounce the name of what you just heard. Sean, go ahead.
That was a song called Ojoy and Torgalig, or the Sister Rivers Song.
The Sister Rivers Song?
Yeah, the song talks about these two rivers, Kojoy and Torgalig, that flow together for a long time. And the poet who wrote the song speaks of these two rivers as being like sisters, walking hand in hand, and the flowers and the grasses, grains that grow on the banks of the rivers and wave in the wind are like the embroidered ornaments on the flowing dresses of the two sisters walking hand in hand.
You've got that down, haven't you?
Yep.
So you do this type of singing yourself. You made reference to a choir earlier that you sang in with the guys in the band.
Oh, the orchestra, yeah.
Oh, orchestra, yeah.
Yeah, the Tuvan National Orchestra has been around for 10 years. It was just starting when I came to Tuva for the first time. They took me on sort of as their student, and then I kind of became their mascot, and then I eventually became a member. You know, I think at first they thought it was kind of funny to have the American hanging around and playing and singing with them, and then I just didn't go away, and I ended up being pretty good. So they let me stick around, and actually ended up getting a medal from the president of Tuva several years ago because of that work. But that's the Tuvan National Orchestra. We'll have CDs from them as well at the concert, and that's sort of like Alash times 8 plus girls.
Oh, plus girls.
Yeah.
So that's an instrumental and vocal ensemble then, just as Alash is?
Absolutely, yeah. And one of the cool things about it is that many of the instrumentalists sing and play at the same time, which is somewhat unusual for orchestras.
Yeah, I would think so. So plus girls, do women do this type of singing as well?
Women do it. It's much rarer, and none of the girls in our orchestra do it, but they do it. You'll hear a whole bunch of different versions about how much it was discouraged in the past, ranging from it wasn't discouraged at all to, you know, that the people were absolutely physically forbidden from doing it. And, you know, the real truth is probably somewhere in between. So, you know, but you do find there's several very good female throat singers. Chanchalai Chodu is one of them, and then Chodra Tumat. There's actually a Tuvan female group. They used to tour, but they haven't much anymore. It's called Tuvah Kvith, which you can find on the internet, T-Y-V-A-K-Y-Z-Y. And they were all throat singing women. So, yes, it definitely does exist, and these days it's becoming more and more popular among women.
So there's no physiological reason that women don't do it as often as men?
Nope, no physiological reason. The only thing is a lot of time women are not able to achieve as low of a fundamental note. However, there is a Japanese girl living in Tuva about 7-8 years, and she gets out there on stage, and she has the highest voice. You know, hi, my name's Mal, I'm going to sing for you. And then she starts to sing, and it's like, she has an amazingly low voice. So even that, you know, it's not always the case. She can sing like a man.
I asked earlier, you know, if the term throat singing is a bit of a misnomer, and I think where I read that was the suspicion that I'm sure many would have, including myself, that would somehow hurt your throat, but I understand it doesn't.
Yes, that's exactly right. The thing is, it's more about finesse than force. And, you know, when you're first learning it, you're learning to use muscles that you've never consciously used with precision before. And so in the beginning, it can hurt a little bit simply because you're just not used to using those muscles in that way. But after you've learned how to do it with precision, it doesn't hurt at all. And actually, most performers, and I can agree with this, you know, feel that it's meditative. And if anything, it actually makes your voice stronger in general.
In order to practice this type of singing.
Mm-hmm. You have to get through a little bit at first, but, you know, just like you're not going to go out and bench press 200 pounds the first day you lift weights, it's the same idea.
Right, and you'll be sore for a while.
Yeah, you get a little sore when you're first trying it, but just like any vocal technique, you want to stay nice and hydrated and you know, not drink cold, sweet stuff before you sing, and it should be okay.
Tell me a little bit about some of the collaborations that Alash has gotten involved in. And also how they've combined the traditional music with some Western types as well.
Well, you know, our thing, ever since I started to work with Alash, has always been to really stay true to the roots of the music, to continue to push deeper into the past to maintain that connection, but also to let the places where collaborations can happen and the places where sort of progress and change can happen come organically out of musical interactions and collaborations with other musicians. And, you know, I'd like to say Alash has done a pretty good job of that. You know, we've done a wide range of collaborations. You know, we've played with the Sun Ra Orchestra under the leadership of Marshall Allen. We've played, of course, with Bela Fleck and the Fleck Tones. We've played with a really amazing bass player called Garth Stevenson, who does a whole very sort of nature-oriented type of music and does really amazing things with the bass that I did not think were possible. We've collaborated with beatboxers and rappers. Actually, we're going to be doing a special guest collaborating at a hip-hop show in Baltimore next month. So it's been interesting because, you know, Alash, even when they were singing Jingle Bells in Tuvan, I think they always felt that you know, we were staying true to the roots of the music. So it's been interesting because, you know, we've seen some other collaborations where people just kind of stick, you know, you take some Tuvan music and then you stick a beat behind it and you call it, you know, a new remix or whatever. But there's nothing organic about the performers coming together and finding common ground. And we always try to push for that in our collaborations and see. And that's one of the things that a lot of musicians who've come to Tuvan notice is that the music is amazingly flexible, and it's amazing how well it can fit into various genres of music.
What's the prevalence of various types of Western music in Tuva?
Oh, lots and lots. I mean, you know, you got people listening to Robin Thicke and stuff over there these days. And, you know, when I got over there 11 years ago, Boney M. was real big still. And, you know, the guys in the band are familiar with Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin and stuff like that. So, you know, people sometimes, and, you know, they get this idea that Tuva is this isolated place that's been left behind in time. And, you know, certainly you can go up to your cousin's place up in the mountains and he's in his yurt or outside of his yurt, you know, mowing hay with a scythe in the ancient way. But then he'll take out his iPhone and check his Facebook profile on it. So, you know, you know, you don't want to give people the idea that these people just popped out of space, out of nowhere. Tuva is very much a part of the global world.
We're going to go out with one more song. This one is called The Reindeer Herder's Song. And my notes say here, because it's actually been a couple of days since I've heard it, that it's actually starts with some much higher singing. And then other things join. And there's a lot of instruments in here, a number of plucked instruments, drums, a harp-sounding instrument. Is that the zither?
Yeah, the chadagan, the zither, that's absolutely right.
So tell me a bit about this song and its progress and so on.
Well, Tuva's amazing because it's about the size of Montana, square mileage-wise, but within this you have very diverse biospheres. In the western part, there's people who herd yaks in the high alpine region. In the south, you have a more arid region where people have traditionally herded camels, in addition to sheep and goats and cows, which you find pretty much everywhere, except for in the northeast, where not too far from where people are herding camels, you've got the people of Toju, who are the reindeer herders. And this is a song from their tradition. They're more hunters than livestock herders. Even the reindeer that they herd are more for transportation and milk rather than for meat. And this is a song that I remember when the band was working on the arrangement of the traditional song. We've been listening to a lot of Ali Fata Touré and music from Mali, and I feel like this is one of those places where it really succeeded, where some organic influence from outside stuff has come in, but yet the sound of the song remains distinctly Tuvan. So for those of you who are Western African blues fans, you may detect a little hint of Ali Farka Touré or Boubacar Traore in the rhythm and the gait of the reindeer.
Before I let you go, one more question for you personally. Do you ever sing with the group on tour?
Almost never. When we very first started touring with our teacher, Kongarol Andar, he would make me get up and sing with the group during the encores, but for the most part, I've really just tried to separate my artistic self from my manager self, and I do a lot of talking and explaining in the concerts, and I'm already present enough. I have a big personality, and I really prefer the guys who are the masters to take care of it. You know, I'm pretty good, but really the three members of Alash, Ian, Ino, and Body, are really some of the very top guys in Tuva. They have the lists of awards to prove it, so I just feel like it's one extra piece of work that I don't need to do. In schools, if the kids ask me to do it, I'll do it for the kids in schools because it's cool for them to see an American do it. But yeah, other than that, I clam up.
So it's just the three of them on the tour.
That's right. Yeah, we've gone to, since the last album, we've changed the format a little bit to a trio, and it's working out really well. It's really, really tight stuff. It gets better every year, and the people who come to the show can expect a really, really tight musical show.
Alash Ensemble will be at the Spurlock Museum, on the campus of the University of Illinois in Urbana, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. It's a free program. And then also free on Monday, a performance demonstration on the campus in the Music Building Auditorium. That's going to be Monday at 3:30 in the afternoon. Sean Quirk is their American manager and interpreter, and he has been my guest on Live and Local today. Thanks, Sean, very much for telling us all about everything you've told us about. It's really been informative.
All right, and on behalf of Ian, Body, and Ianol, and myself, thank you very much for having us on the show, Kevin.
The Reindeer Herder's Song by Alash Ensemble here on Live and Local.
Shana.